John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn on the Kathleen Dunn Show today. Kathleen will be back on Monday. Well, this hour, we're going to hear the story of Ann Jones, who retreated to Norway after spending quite a bit of time covering the war in Afghanistan, including time spent embedded with the troops there. After spending time in Norway, though, she came back to the United States and found the American way of labor, family services, and social services kind of backwards. She says she got a crash course in social democracy in Norway. We'll hear her story and we'll take your comments as well. 800-642-1234, talk at WPR.org or the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page. Always to get in touch. Ann Jones, welcome to the Kathleen Dunn Show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be with you.
So you spent time in Afghanistan covering the fighting there. You were embedded with troops there, and you decided you needed a break from that. Why go to Norway?
Well, actually, I'd spent most of my time in Afghanistan working with Afghan women well before I embedded with the troops. So I had about a decade spent there and in other war zones, and I was ready for a little peace and quiet. So I decided to go to the land of my ancestors and see what that was like. I went on a fellowship from the Fulbright Association, the Fulbright Foundation, which is a U.S.-Norway cooperative fellowship. And my project was to find out what my life would have been like or might have been like if my grandparents had been a little more patient and just stayed put in Norway instead of migrating to Wisconsin in the 19th century.
There probably, after listening to the story that you're going to tell us this hour, there are probably a number of us who may wish the same thing. So you got to Norway. What did you find there?
Well, I spent 4 years there, and over the course of those years, looking into how Norwegians lived, because I made a lot of friends and met a lot of people who seemed to be having a very nice time in their lives, and I needed to find out how that was happening for everyone. So I did a lot of investigating into the way the country works. And the result of that was this little article I've done recently on social democracy for dummies, as I called it. We have a presidential candidate now, as everyone knows, Bernie Sanders, who's talking a lot about what he calls democratic socialism. But much as I like many of the ideas he presents, he doesn't seem to explain the whole system very well. So that's what I tried to do in my piece, to talk not about democratic socialism, but the social democracy of Norway and the other Nordic countries and how that system differs from ours.
Well, let's maybe go through some of that. What is it like day to day for the average Norwegian, the people that you lived among for 4 years? What's their day to day life like?
Well, it's a lot more relaxed than ours is. I lived mostly in the capital in Oslo, though I traveled all over the country. But the average Norwegian works 37 hours a week. Most don't work overtime. You're considered kind of inefficient and dumb if you can't get your work done in the hours allotted to you. So if you compare that to the way people work in the U.S. now, the average American works about 2 months longer than the average Norwegian. So they get off work fairly early in the afternoon and have plenty of time to pick up their kids from school or to go off for a hike or go out for a beer. do whatever they feel like doing after work. There are a great number of leisure hours, not to mention the long paid vacations they get a couple of times a year. So they're pretty happy in their jobs and pretty happy in the welfare state that backs them up in all their endeavors.
Yeah, let's talk about that and the types of social services that are available to everyone in Norway, and contrast that with what you saw when you got back to the United States.
Well, I might back up and start with how they managed to do this, because our politicians tend to suggest one program they'd like to start or another they'd like to start. And the thing about the Scandinavian systems, what they call the Nordic model, is that it really is kind of all of a piece. You have to have the whole package in order to make what goes in one end come out the other and keep going around. So they have a mixed economy with a strong capitalist system, but very much regulated by the negotiations that it has to, that owners have to enter into through their associations with labor every year. The workers and the owners' representative groups at the national level determine work and working conditions. And so that there's full employment and everybody making very good wages, and that is responsible for guaranteeing the other side of the coin, which is the universal social welfare program. The funds come from the taxes that everybody pays, some high but often not as high as ours, and they're progressive and very fair taxes. And that funds free education for everyone, starting with kindergartens that begin at age one. It funds paid parental leaves from work for a full year for both mom and dad in turn after a child is born. It funds all medical care, physical and mental health care. It funds care for the elderly, care for the disabled, the whole spectrum of services. And in addition, of course, pays for a lot of the infrastructure of the country, which means excellent transportation systems, public transportation systems that run on time, and all of those amenities, which in our country have grown a bit shabby over recent years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a nice system where you can go to work and do your job and know that no matter what happens, the whole country has your back.
Well, you wrote that the Nordic model starts with a deep commitment to equality and democracy, because you can't have one without the other. Explain that.
Well, it kind of makes common sense, although we've forgotten that in this country. Democracy is supposed to consist of the equal participation of everyone and equal benefits to everyone. Well, that means that people should be coming out pretty much on a par with one another. If that equality gets out of whack, then the Scandinavians believe you don't have a true democracy anymore. And of course, now in this country, we are now the most unequal country in economic terms and many other terms as well of any of the developed countries in the world. And in fact, now political scientists tell us that we can't really call ourselves a democracy anymore. We are now technically an oligarchy, that is, a government that's run at the expense of the citizens by and for the very rich.
800-642-1234 is the number to call to join our program. We're talking with author and journalist Ann Jones. Her piece runs in The Nation, and it's an interesting piece, which is titled, if I can get to the top of the page here, "After I Lived in Norway, America Felt Backward, Here's Why, A Crash Course in Social Democracy." And that appears in The Nation magazine. You can check it out there. Wondering what you think about this. Have you visited the Nordic countries? Have you been to Scandinavia? What did you find there? And how would you compare life there with what you've experienced here in the United States? Do you think that what they're doing there would work here? Let us know what you think. And, of course, if you have questions for Ann Jones, we welcome those as well. 800-642-1234. Let's take a call before we go to the first break this hour. We'll start in Plover, and Brad is on the phone. Brad, hello.
Hi there. For many decades, the United States led the world in upward mobility, where someone could go from rags to riches, and hence the coin, the American Dream, came into being. But since then, with the gross inequality, that now America is ranked like 18th for upward mobility, whereas the democratic socialist countries rank 1, 2, 3, Denmark, Norway, and then Finland. And I think that's very interesting that, you know, where critics say that democratic socialist countries aren't good for business and business will flounder, and but that's just not the case. Denmark is ranked number one for business. I just read that last week. I'd like to guess the comment on that, please.
Well, that's perfectly true, and in fact, yes, this kind of more equal distribution of everything is good for business, and good for everybody. In fact, I got a letter, an email message just today from a reader in Norway who asked if Americans had forgotten about Henry Ford. They got some of their thinking on this subject from Ford, because if you remember, when he started Ford Motors, he created quite a stir by paying his workers a very high wage. And when asked why he did that, he said, well, if people don't have money, there's no buying. And if there's no buying, there's no selling. So you have to put that money in at one end, and it has to circle around, whereas we put it in and it goes out the other end to an offshore island or something. It winds up outside the country.
Mm-hmm. Brad, thanks for that phone call. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll have some more callers. A line should be opening up for you shortly at 800-642-1234. I'm sure a lot of people are going to have questions on this topic. Ann Jones is my guest. We're talking about her experiences in Norway and then what it was like to come back to the United States. And we'll continue that conversation in just a moment. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. Kathleen comes back on Monday. You're listening to this program on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour on the Kathleen Dunn Show, we're talking about the contrasts between life in the Nordic lands, particularly Norway, and what we experience here in the United States. Ann Jones is with us this hour on the Kathleen Dunn Show, and she spent time in Norway after having spent a decade covering the various wars in Afghanistan. And she spent 4 years in Norway before coming back to the United States. And she tells her story in an article in The Nation magazine. You can read it there. And we're talking about it here on the Ideas Network. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234 is the number to call to join the program. Let's go back to the phones and hear from Eric in Endeavor. Nice alliteration there. Eric, thanks for joining us today.
Hello. How are you?
I'm great. Go ahead.
Hey, I'm just curious where her great-grandparents immigrated to in Wisconsin, because I just found out my great-grandfather came down the St. Lawrence River in, like, the early 1880s, and settled in Coon Prairie or Coon Valley, and I was just starting to research my ancestry and think about reverse migrating back to Norway.
Go back up the St. Lawrence Seaway?
I might be doing that.
Well, it sounds pretty attractive. So where did your ancestors settle in Wisconsin?
I grew up in Eau Claire, some others settled in Dakota Territory, but most of them settled in Wisconsin.
And Erica, thanks for sharing your story with us. Let's go to Paul in Slinger next. Paul, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I think you have to understand that the Norwegian federal government was pretty savvy. When they discovered oil in the North Sea, the 200-mile federal exclusive zone, they made the decision that all the oil that was going to be taken out of that huge pool of oil was going to remain in the ownership of their federal government, meaning the citizens of the country. And they created what they call a sovereign wealth fund. And this money is used to benefit the society or the citizens of the country. Well, in the United States, whole Gulf of Mexico, another area, the 200-mile exclusive zone, we peddle, Congress, you know, because of lobbyists, we just sell a lease. So all the oil that comes out is the lease is paid to the federal government by Texaco or Mobil Oil, there's petroleum, and then they sell it into the world market. Where in Norway, they just hire firms to take the oil out of the ground and they let them make a good profit on that. But the oil is maintained, the ownership is maintained by the government, mm-hmm. and they sell it into the world market.
Paul, your phone connection isn't very good, so I'm going to let you go, but I think we got the point. Is that one of the keys to the success of the Norwegian economy and its system of the, its social safety net system, the fact that they kept the oil in the possession of the people, and that's one of the things that's driving their economy?
Well, no, actually. The caller is right that it certainly contributes to their future in that they have put it in this sovereign wealth fund, which is now the biggest sovereign wealth fund in the world. It's worth almost $800 billion. But they just keep that for the future. They made a law that the government could spend no more than 4% of the annual income on its projects, and no government has ever spent that much. They just save it. But that has left the world with the impression that, oh, it's just because they have oil that they can do all this. And that is actually not the fact. Interestingly enough, the Ministry of Finance released a report that said what really made the difference in the Norwegian economy was gender equality. It was freeing women from the family so that they could go out into the workforce at equal pay with men, which meant that in a very short period of time, they doubled the tax base of the country. With everybody making good wages, everybody paying taxes, that's where the money comes from for the social welfare system. And the Ministry of Finance calculated that the additional work of women in society at equal pay with men has been worth more to the net wealth of Norway than the entire accumulation since the 1970s of wealth in this petroleum fund. Mm. So in other words, women are a greater asset. Women at work are a greater asset than oil to that country. But in order to get women into the workforce easily, what the government decided to do is break down that institution that we like so much in this country, the nuclear family, where dad is off working and mom is at home taking care of the house and the children. Actually, few families can afford to do that these days. Almost every family is a two-worker family now. But in Norway, the government realized how undemocratic an arrangement that is when men were working for money and women's work was completely unpaid and confined to the house. So in Norway, the government gradually assumed all that unpaid labor that women traditionally did at home. And there we have the basis of the social welfare system, the care of children, the education of children, the health of everyone, the care of the elderly, all those things that women used to do for no pay. Now the government has taken over, which means that women, like men, can go out into employment, make a good wage, enjoy their work without worrying about their kids or anyone in their care. And that's made all the difference economically and socially for the Scandinavian countries.
Now, you lived in Norway for about 4 years before moving back to the United States. And when you return, you say, quote, "It felt a lot like stepping back into that other violent, impoverished world where anxiety runs high and people are quarrelsome." Talk about your experience. After spending 4 years in Norway, you step off the airplane. I'm assuming you flew home. You step off the plane, and you're in the United States. What was talk about what that felt like.
Well, everybody here, I don't know if you notice it or if everyone's just used to it, but everybody here is anxious. Everybody here is moving as fast as they can, but everybody's worried about something. Everybody's got, you know, a sick relative or is afraid of losing their job or afraid of losing their house or is complaining about their wages because they haven't gotten a raise or can't even find a job. And in the New England area where I'm living, there's a huge epidemic of death by overdoses of opioids or heroin that has taken the place of opioids. And this seems to be all across the nation now, one of the leading killers of people. And we hear complaints all the time that there aren't enough shelters for all the homeless people. I see people begging in the streets here. In a major city, there are people out begging, and you just don't, that's just unimaginable in Scandinavia. But it is the worry that everyone has about whatever their particular problem with this system is that creates this atmosphere of tension that I feel almost everywhere I go here, and that I never felt in Norway, because people feel quite secure. This goes back to that question that one of the earlier callers asked about social mobility. Why is it that people have so much more capacity to change their style of life or their occupation in Scandinavia than they do here? And it is, I think, because the government, the state, always has your back. You can undertake in Norway whatever you want to do, because you don't have to worry about what happens if I get hit by a car, what happens if my kids get sick, what happens if my wife loses her job, all of that is covered, and you can do you can undertake whatever interests you to make your way in life.
800-642-1234, the number to call to join the program. Brian has called to make his comments known. Brian is in Milwaukee. Go ahead.
Hi. I just have two short comments, one of which is, and which hasn't been brought up in this conversation so far, is the fact that most of these small Scandinavian countries have very homogenous populations. And you don't find the ethnic diversity that we do in this country and in very many other, I want to call Western countries, other European countries, not part of Scandinavia. And the other point is that you also find the fact that most of these countries have some sort of established church, or what was once established, if it isn't anymore. And you find people who that tends to make a lot of similar like thinking. And I would think that this probably has made it a lot easier to push some of these social programs through than our, as a history teacher might once said in college, that if it weren't for the Puritans, this whole country would be a lot less screwed up than it is now. So I think those are two influences that she hasn't mentioned up to this point. I'd like to hear her comments on that.
Brian, thank you. Ann Jones?
Thanks, Brian, for that that important question. It's widely believed that the Scandinavian countries are all more homogeneous than most countries. But in fact, because of their very generous policies towards immigrants, particularly refugees seeking asylum all these years, for a good half century at least, they do have very diverse populations. But they, because of their social systems and their excellent education systems and the free language lessons and help with finding jobs and adequate housing and the support they give to immigrants or have given to immigrants all these years, it's a very integrated population. So it's not quite as it is homogeneous in thinking because they do such a good job of integrating people who come from other places. But many of their immigrants have been from Eastern Europe, so they still look like more a white population, and all a brown and white population than a black, brown, and white population, though recently they have had a big influx of African immigrants from Somalia and Nigeria. I lived in a part of Oslo that where many of those immigrants live, and it didn't look very much different from New York City. So I think when we talk about them as homogeneous, that implies that with our more diverse population, we probably couldn't do this. So I kind of need to remind listeners that we once had a much more active welfare, social welfare system in this country, particularly with FDR's New Deal, which employed a lot of ideas that had come to this country with Scandinavian immigrants in the 19th century. Mm-hmm. So it's not that we can't do this kind of thing here, but that we have, in the last 40 years, tried to take that New Deal apart and get rid of it and go back to much more exclusivity. It's not that we can't do it here. It's that the people in power in more recent years don't want to do it here. So they point to things like the homogeneous populations of Scandinavia to suggest that we can't do it, and that's simply not true. And then to address that other issue of the church, Norway does have a state church to which you may belong if you want to, or you don't have to if you don't want to. Very free, great deal of freedom of religion. And as one of the government ministers said to me, a big difference between Norway and the U.S. is that the U.S. believes in God, but not government, whereas in Norway, they believe in government and not so much in God anymore. Mm. And that even if you do believe in God, you need a government to run things in society.
Let's talk about a little bit about politics in Norway. I understand from your article that Norway has 8 major political parties.
Actually, 21.
21, okay. So, I mean, that's even, I think my head just exploded. So 21 political parties. How does that play out? I mean, we have two, and they basically, well, I'm not even going to go there. So there are 21 major political parties in Norway. How does that manifest itself in terms of what goes on politically there?
There are two larger parties, but they have 21 because people tend to vote policies, not personalities. And whereas we criticize special interests, they recognize that people do have special interests. The interests of farmers are different from the interests of professional people living in the capital, for example. So the 21 different parties, and you can start new ones if you get a certain number of people to sign up, represent the different interests of people in different segments of the country, different parts of the country, different occupations, what have you. With a certain number of votes in general elections, some members of some of those parties will have enough votes to get seats in parliament. The current parliament includes 8 parties. And then nobody has a majority, so the one with the greatest number of votes, which at this time happens to be the Conservatives, team up with a couple of other parties to form a majority and form a government. And then that means that they pretty much have to operate by cooperation and consensus to get anything done. And they do operate very well in that way and get a great deal done. So the way they that people express their vote for the policies they want to see enacted is directly reflected in the makeup of the parliament and the makeup of the executive part of the government. Whereas here we vote for a personality who stands up and says, oh, I'm going to make the country greater, or I'm going to do this, or I'm going to do that. And then they get in office, and goodness knows, it's a coin toss what they're going to do. We don't have that same kind of democratic input into our system anymore.
Well, I mean, we have political parties who are dedicated to making sure that the other political party can't do anything.
That seems to be the case, doesn't it?
And they aren't secret about it. I mean, they come right out and say it.
Yes, but it's because this again goes to our belief of the conservatives, the so-called conservatives. Norwegian conservatives are quite different. But the Republican Party, which believes that the less government you have, the better, because that leaves all those Republican billionaires free to run off with the money. This just wouldn't happen in Scandinavia. They wouldn't allow that to happen.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we have more callers. This topic is really exploding on the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page. We won't be able to read all of those comments. You can go there and take a look and see what other people are saying and add your voice to the conversation as well. This hour, we're talking with author and journalist Ann Jones about the contrasts between the time that she spent in Norway learning about what goes on there and life in the United States. And that's a vast oversimplification of the conversation, but it's only an hour-long program. We have a lot of people commenting on Facebook. Here's one comment from Cookie, who writes, after spending 5 weeks in Sweden this past year, I too think we are so far from what Europe has done for their people. It is incredibly sad that we think we are number one when our way of life is good for mostly white people and ignores the poor. If we had universal health care and put people to work on our roads and bridges, etc., then we'd be healthier and happier as a society. By the way, go to the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page, leave your comment there, and be sure to like the page while you're there, and then you'll get updates on all the great shows that we have here. But Cookie's comment pretty much in line with what you've been saying, Ann Jones.
Yes, I thank Cookie for that comment, and I'm glad that she was able to observe that in 5 weeks in Sweden. You know, many tourists go to the Scandinavian countries and they look around and they think, well, this looks very nice, but looks kind of like home, and they don't recognize how completely different the underlying system that makes it all possible really is. So good for Cookie for that observation. But I do notice that that is, she mentions, putting the poor to work. In the Scandinavian countries, there aren't any poor.
Let's go back to the phones. Kathy is with us from Madison. Kathy, hello.
Hi, John and Anne. I'm married to a Swedish man who came over in 1970, and I've been to Sweden many times and in Norway, too. And over the years, I've seen a lot of changes, and I also kind of know the good and the bad, especially from my husband's perspective and his family. I mean, he feels very just unfree over in Sweden, and he's the only one in his family who came here, but he just thinks America has a lot more freedom for people. And they are still rather homogeneous, I would say, as far as the populations. I just know that everyone I know in Sweden married a Swede, you know, so that's interesting. There's also some, even though Sweden and Norway are a lot alike, it wasn't that long ago that we read in the paper that after Norway got oil and all of a sudden everyone found work in Norway, and there was an apartment ad that said, good for Poles and Swedes, because Polish people and Swedish people were coming to, and we just chuckled about that because can you imagine advertising apartments that way here? And that was only a few years ago. Also, things like higher education. If you don't do well in school, you don't get to go to college. You have to make the grade. And so, and I have a nephew who didn't make the grade. You know, he couldn't. He's doing fine. They do help them find other jobs. But, and they're also having a big, big problem over there, and it's a big issue now with immigrants. Last time we were there, there were immigrants begging at every doorway with paper cups, every doorway of every hotel, of every store, no matter where we went in Sweden. And that was a couple summers ago. So it is an issue, and they're all rethinking their policy. And like my husband said, it's been, we've been married for almost 40 years. And years ago, you know, they paid for your, when I met him, they paid for your child care, you know, child leave for 2 years and everything. And that's increased and increased and increased over the years. And they also had a thing where when the immigrants came in, they provided them with a home. They had to learn Swedish fluently before they could work. So they gave them, you know, payments to live and take care of themselves while they studied. And they just see it as unsustainable now with all the immigrants that have come in. And I saw it myself.
Kathy, thanks for sharing. We're starting to get a little short of time, and I want to make sure that Ann Jones has a chance to respond before we go to another caller. Ann Jones?
Well, I'm not surprised that Kathy found the situation in Sweden to be somewhat more problematic than the account I'm giving of Norway. Because many Swedes will tell you some of these things, although I went to Sweden often, and I've never observed all those beggars. I've never observed any. Perhaps I haven't had my eyes open. But Sweden had a considerable period of a more conservative government, replacing their social democratic government. And they did a good deal of privatization of things. They implemented many of the neoliberal economic, what we call reforms, that this country has done. And it tipped the equilibrium in that country. They've now returned to a labor government, and they're working hard to repair some of those things. But once you start the slide away from equality by privatizing things, then you run into this kind of trouble that Kathy has been describing. And I would say that what she was observing are the early stages of what in our country has now become extreme, where we have billionaires. You know, our elections have become the contest of billionaires, and our democracy has pretty much ceased to function altogether.
Kathy, thanks for sharing your story with us this afternoon. Let's go to Sun Prairie, and Joe is on the phone from Sun Prairie. Joe, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Great show. I agree with everything that the guest has said. And I think that the nation and WPR should be strongly considered by everybody. In this upcoming political climate, by the way, I was in Iowa for the caucuses, and it's we got a show coming up here pretty soon in Wisconsin. How can we help voters make better decisions on who to elect? There seems to be a disconnect between the corporations, their limitations from liability and immunity from the taxes and things like that in exchange for regulation. And people seem to forget that. There's a lot of fear-mongering out, comments like, government bureaucrats are overpaid, lazy, and so forth. Curious if the guest has any insight into, because fact and rational discussion really are not going to work. But how can we convince our neighbors to make better decisions and vote for candidates that are really going to look out for the people and not the few corporations and so forth?
Joe, thanks for your question. Ann Jones?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? It is surprising to see people who in this country who are the most discouraged are coming out staunchly on the one hand for the Social Democrat, Bernie Sanders, and on the other hand for the arch billionaire, Donald Trump, because they think a strong man will save them. Obviously, somebody needs to give a little education to those Trump folks, but we've been subject, I would suggest, as an American historian, since the time of the Reagan administration, to increasing levels of high decibel propaganda about that's been opposed to government and in favor of what they call the free market, which of course is, there is no such thing as a free market. It all works to funnel money upward to the 1%, as we now know. So it takes a lot of political discussion, and everybody needs to go take this up with their neighbors, I think, and do their best to try to give Americans a refresher course in how economy actually operates. You certainly have good examples there in Wisconsin. Wisconsin was the home of the Progressive Party, which was founded in large part on ideas that were brought by Scandinavian and German socialist immigrants in the 19th century. And if you just look back at your own history in Wisconsin to that progressive movement and what a drastic change you have in the current state government, you'll see that you've been going in the wrong direction. And maybe you can convince your neighbors to turn around and go back.
Joe, thanks for your call. Let's go to Germantown next, where Mark is on the line with us. Mark, hello.
I think it's kind of interesting with the possible socialist candidate we have for the Democratic Party. I think if they start to criticize them, I think that as a platform, they should show all the great things that socialism has created, the interstate highways, the military, the Army Corps of Engineers, all the great research that's cured all these illness, all these dilemma that the U.S. that we've had with health issues. Just they should just hammer it hard, show everything that socialism's been responsible for.
And let's not forget Medicare in that excellent list you just gave.
Thanks, Mark, for the call. Quickly, let's go to Milwaukee again, and John is on the phone with us. John, hello.
Hello, thank you. I'd like to ask her, your guest, Ann Jones, if Norway has a private central bank, or it's like here the monopoly, Goldman Sachs, et cetera, stock holding corporation.
No, all of the most of the enterprises are. You'll find both private sector and public sector in all of those enterprises. But the always the public sector, through the democratically elected government, maintains a balance of things and oversees all of those private enterprises. In many, for example, in many corporations also, the government will be a principal stockholder, so that there is even a stockholder control exerted by the government in private enterprises. And in those ways, they keep all of these aspects of the economic and financial sector in balance.
Here's an email from Joanne, who writes, just listening to your program, I don't believe the countries in question ever had slavery. Ours was built on it, and racism is at the root of almost every problem we still have today. Michelle Obama has said, we all love our own children. We just have to expand that to include all children. Precisely, but we don't or can't because we still see the other.
I think that raises an excellent point. Yes, exactly. And I would say not only racism, but misogyny is still a very serious problem in the United States. We still do not have even equality of the sexes, the genders, much less the races. And all of those things need to be equalized for us to have a true democracy.
Do you have any plans to return to Norway?
Oh, yes. Yes, I'll be doing that because I'll be continuing my research and also continuing skiing. And John, if I may just add one more thing.
Sure.
You credited The Nation with this piece that I've written. It actually appeared in its original form in cooperation with The Nation at tomdispatch.com online. There's a slightly longer version there, and Tom Dispatch is calls itself an antidote to the mainstream news. So I think it's a website that many of your listeners might be interested in looking at.
Reading your article, it seemed to me like there might be a book in here someplace. Do you have any plans to write one about this about these issues?
It's coming, but it's coming slowly. Norwegians tend to do things slowly and thoughtfully when they go about their governmental business, and so it's such an anxiety-free and pleasant society that I've been going slowly, too. It makes the book come more slowly also, but I hope eventually there'll be one here down the road, because there's much more to say about this wonderful system, and so much of it that pertains to our particular problems right now and offers us such good ideas for trying to turn things back to a better America, which I'm sure many of your listeners still remember.
And that's a great place to leave our conversation. Ann Jones, thank you so much for spending this hour with us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be with you, and thanks to all your callers for their interesting contribution.
And thanks to Scott Myers for producing this hour of programming. KP Whaley handled on-air production, and we also had technical assistance, as always, from Dave Potratz, and thanks so much to him. Thanks to all of you for listening this week. Kathleen is back on Monday with All Things Political, and I'm sure you'll enjoy listening to her again. It's been my pleasure to be with you this week. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.